You are listening to Amplify Your Success Podcast, episode 77. And today I'm going to explore the paradox of potential with one of my new friends, Tom Singer. So let's get started.
Welcome to the Amplify Your Success Podcast. Hey, are you a thought leader, creative entrepreneur, or change maker and want to magnify your impact, boost influence while creating a financial abundance? Stay tuned for today's inspiring episode with your host, Melanie Benson.
Hello there, inspired entrepreneurs and business leaders. It's Melanie Benson here, and I'm super excited for today's guest. I got to know him recently at the New Media Summit, which, by the way, if you're a podcaster or want to be on podcasts, it's a great event hosted by my friend Steve Ulsher. And so we're going to explore the idea that potential is a bit of a paradox. And I can't wait to continue this conversation in our Amplify Your Success community. So if you are a expert and building your business around your expertise, you're wanting to move out of ambiguity and into an influential state in your industry, then you want to join us over at AmplifyYourSuccessCommunity.com. It's free right now on Facebook. And we're going to have some power pack conversations about the topics we bring here on the podcast, as well as I've got great resources, and it's super fun to build your business with other people who are moving and shaking like you are. So we'll see you over there in the Facebook group. Now, let me introduce my guest today. If you have ever felt that you or a member of your team has amazing potential, but maybe you're not quite living up to it, hey, potential is great, but it doesn't necessarily equal results. That's what our guest today is all about, Tom Singer. Now, Tom Singer is the host of the Cool Things Entrepreneurs Do podcast, which was, by the way, named on Inc.com as one of 8 business podcasts to listen to in 2018. I gotta say, I was just slightly jealous. He got that call out on Inc., but well-deserved for sure. He's obsessed with helping people take the leap across the gap that exists between potential and results. And Tom's interviewed over 300 CEOs, entrepreneurs, business leaders, solopreneurs, and others on his podcast to explore in-depth conversations he's learned where he's realized there's no single thing that holds people back from achieving more, nor is there one solution to reaching the top levels of success. It's really unique for each person. Now, Tom has had an eclectic career in sales and marketing for Fortune 500 companies, law firms, small businesses. He's written 12 books, and when he was 21 years old, he was a 5-day returning champion on the $25,000 Pyramid Game Show. Our guest today, Tom Singer. Thanks, Tom, for joining me today. It's really awesome to have you with us. And I'm excited to talk to you, not just because I share your passion about this gap between the potential that people have and the way they're generating results. But you are one of those people that, I like have all these great overlaps with. There's so many cool things that we share, like both going to San Diego State. Both of us have great podcasts. And you really, like, you are a keynote speaker that's actually getting paid money to go out and speak. And I know there's a lot of people that really covet that. So
It's funny because I was at an event with a bunch of podcasters and somebody said, "What do you do?" And I said, "Well, I'm a professional speaker." And he said, "Yeah, but how do you make your money?" I said, "I get paid to speak." And he looked at me and said, "Well, that model is dead." And I'm like, "For God's sake, don't tell my clients that. Don't tell my clients that." He goes, "Well, now you speak, you go to someone's stage, you speak to sell your coaching program." And I said, "No, that's a way to be a speaker."
Yes.
But I actually get paid to go and speak at conferences and inside company meetings, talking about how do you get people, you know, to get across this gap from potential and results, or how do they connect better with people in this gadget crazy world?
Yes, which I absolutely love. And I want to talk a little bit more about how you got into keynote speaking before we talk about more about potential. You are doing something that so many people either reject, which I don't understand because I think it's such a viable model, but you've made it work. Like, how did you decide to get into the whole keynote speaking business?
So it started off, I was the marketing director for a big law firm. I was the marketing director for a firm that had 10 offices around the country. And I was in charge of marketing and business development for Austin, Texas, and Dallas, Texas. And the managing partner, after he hired me, said, "Look, you're really well connected in, you know, the community. And the lawyers really should be, but they're not. And so I need you to create a class on how to network for lawyers. And I'm going to make it mandatory for all the lawyers in the office. And I literally thought, oh, they're going to hate this. And so I prepared like a 90-minute seminar on, you know, I think I called it Networking for Lawyers. It was a very creative name. And the managing partner made everybody attend. And people came in, they were kind of rolling their eyes like, oh, our new marketing person. I think I'd worked there a month. And at the end, one partner raised his hand and I called on him. And he said, I have a complaint. And I didn't know this guy, but I thought, really? In front of the whole firm, we're just going to throw me under the bus. And he said, the complaint is, this was too good. There was too much information in it. This is the best non-legal skills training, the best business skills training I've ever been to in like 15 years as a lawyer. He goes, you need to do more of these. This can't be a one-time deal. You have to do these classes for the lawyers quarterly on a variety of business and sales skills. And they started, he went back to his office and called the managing partner of all 8 other offices and said, you have to have our new marketing person come and do this class. So I, as part of my job, I started flying around and teaching lawyers how to network, and they liked it. And they started giving me to their clients. One of the people, the Washington, D.C. office, asked my boss if they could have me for a couple of days. And they gave me to a tech company who was doing like a users conference because they were struggling with trying to afford 2 keynote speakers. And the lawyer was like, he was on the board and he's like, oh, well, we have a guy. We'll just give him to you. So they flew me into D.C. and I did this speech at this like 200, 300 person tech users conference. And the CEO of the company was like, why don't you just do that for a living? And I said, well, I'm not famous. I haven't written a book. I had all kinds of reasons. And he goes, so I paid the other guy a lot of money and you were free and you were better. This is a real thing. And he told me his brother-in-law had been part of the National Speakers Association. And I said, I don't even know what that is. And he said, talk to my brother-in-law. So I called this guy and he told me all about life as a speaker. And I thought, ooh, that's better than what I do. And it took me a long time to get there, but that's how it started.
That's a very inspiring backstory. I mean, you know, you're doing something people all over the world would give their right arm to do, right? Like be able to go out, fly around, give talks, get paid. You know, before we get into the rest of this, I think it'd be worth just talking about for a minute. Like, was there something that had to shift for you to be saying, yes, I will do this full time?
Well, yeah, I mean, I spent the next 5 years after that happened sort of researching the business. I started going to my local chapter, the National Speakers Association. Of course, I wasn't a professional speaker, so some of the people looked at me like, oh, isn't that cute? He wants to be one. And I started talking. Every time when you're in sales and marketing, you go to a lot of conferences and there's speakers. And so I would talk to the ones who were not famous, but who were the featured professional speakers who were there. And I would ask them about the business and that, you know, success leaves clues. So I talk to people all the time. So when people ask me, how do I become a paid professional speaker? My first question to them always is, how many speaker friends do you have? And of course, nowadays we live in a world where everybody thinks they're friends with everybody because they've linked to them on LinkedIn. And I say, no, I mean friends like you go to their house for Thanksgiving if you don't have family plans, like that level of friendship. And sometimes like I'll be at coffee with somebody and they'll go, well, there's you. And I'm like, we just met like 15 minutes ago. We're not friends. I'm talking about how many people do you know who do this business? And I don't care what business you go into. You have to be around people who are doing it because it looks like one thing from the outside and it's something entirely different from the inside. And so, you know, I started getting around people as much as I could who made their living speaking, and success leaves clues. And I started learning. And so, I wanted to do it. I was kind of a wannabe for a long time. And I was even getting paid a little bit on the side from some small groups and things. But what put me into it full-time was on April 9th, 2009, I got laid off from my job at the bottom of the recession and there was no work for marketing people. So marketing people were being laid off, you know, thousands and thousands every day. So I just said, well, I'm going to go after the speaking business. And it worked out.
So you kind of got, it forced your hand to take the leap.
Yeah, I was pushed out and I took the leap. And I'd love to say, oh, I started making a lot of money and out-earned myself right away. I mean, it took 4 or 5 years to get my income back to what it was to be a corporate marketing director. And, you know, even still, it's not like I'm rich, but I like what I do.
And isn't that rich all in itself, right? How many people are sacrificing their life, they're sacrificing their happiness to do things just for the money. So you're a great inspiration for a lot of us.
Yeah, I love what I do, and I'm very fortunate, and I can have some good years and I have some bad years, but at the end of the day, you know, I like being able to get up and tell stories and have people be inspired and learn from it. And so I'm really committed to the business side of speaking too.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for sharing a little bit about that. You know, one of the things that originally gravitated me towards you is I started, first of all, seeing about your Cool Things Entrepreneurs Do podcast, which is completely rock star. And for those of you following me, you probably saw me put Tom's podcast on my top list, I think it was the top 20 hot podcasts to listen to. It's really good. He's got some great guests, different kind of guests than I usually bring on. So it's really inspiring. But you also talk a lot about potential and this paradox of potential. And it got me really curious. Like, what does he mean by the paradox of potential? Because I have a whole thing I do about potential, but it's completely different. And so as I started reading on your website and looking into what you do, I love this idea that you want to help people uncover that gap. So let's talk a little bit about how people fall into this gap between their potential and the results they could be achieving.
Sure. Well, I mean, the first part is that we get really excited in our society about potential. And people get really, really fired up about finding their potential, about, you know, all this stuff. But the problem is, the paradox is that potential does not equal results. There are a lot of people with a lot of potential who never achieve anything. Now, sometimes that's by choice. So I have a daughter who is a great archer, like firing arrows at targets. And, you know, she started it. She's 16 now. She started it when she was like 11. Because if you think back 5 years ago, what was the big movie for preteen girls?
Right.
You know, Hunger Games.
Right.
And, you know, so she got really excited to take archery. Well, she was a natural at it. And like in the club where we go, they got really, the first couple of years, they were so excited because she literally was just like a bam, bam, bam. She was winning things out of her age group. She entered one tournament and won the whole thing for age like 12 to 16. And they're like, wow, you have potential. Like you could go to the Olympics and you should start coming like 3 days a week. She's like, I don't want to go 3 days a week. And so she goes, the only reason she kept up with it is she's 16. One of her best friends is somebody she's done archery with for years, but the person lives 20 miles away. So they get together once a week at archery, and the girl's 18. So she's graduating from high school. So they just kind of said, we're both going to keep doing this until the other girl moves away to college. And after that, she's like, I'm not going to do archery anymore. And like the coach is like, no, she's like the prodigy. And she doesn't care. So sometimes people have potential, but they don't want to do anything with it. And that's okay. You don't have to do everything you're a natural at. However, sometimes people are trying to achieve their potential and they're still coming up short. So, you know, it's one of those things that there's this whole paradox that we think potential means something, but without the right actions and without the forethought and without a self-understanding and without the right people supporting you, you're never going to be able to reach those goals.
Yeah, that's well said. It's funny you mentioned the story about your daughter. My niece is very, very talented in the arts, and she's a brilliant artist. At the age of like 14, she was getting paid to create art. But she was also really, really talented as a singer. But she just, you know, everybody was like, oh my God, she sings so beautifully. And she had no interest in pursuing it.
Right.
And so I could see, you know, even in her, there was one pursued and one not. And it was interesting to watch that, you know, unfold for her.
Well, I've had people come up to me and say, no, if my kid had Olympic level talent in anything, I would make them do it. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm just not that kind of a parent. If she right. doesn't want to do it, my wife and I are like, you know, okay, we're not going to, you know, she doesn't have to do it.
Well, and I'm wondering how this plays out for people who have teams and are hiring people. And, you know, I think we've all had that experience. I'm sure as you've hired probably hundreds of people over the years, and I have, you know, oftentimes you see the potential in someone, but then there's a huge gap between what you know they can do and what's possible and the actual performance. What do we need to be more aware of when we're in that hiring process?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing to remember is that, you know, we get so excited by the potential. I mean, large companies and some small have these entire programs around their high potentials, and they designate who's a, they call them hypos. And they, for 30 years, they've had special training programs for these hires, often young hires, who they're going to put through special training. Well, a bunch of schools like Harvard went back a couple of years ago and researched some of these big company training programs for their high potential programs. And it turns out after 20 or 30 years, the people who went through the programs aren't in the C-suite at these companies. And there was two main findings, and I'm sort of probably oversimplifying it, but there were two main findings. One was, when you tell somebody you have high potential, you're special in this company, oftentimes they believe you. And then they start thinking, well, why do I work here? So you do all this special training, and then they go to work for your competitor, someone else who pays them more money, because they're saying, well, everyone around here tells me how great I am. I'm in the high potential program. I could get paid more over there. So what they're doing is training up their competitors. The other side was the people who didn't leave still weren't in the C-suite. And a lot of that was people kind of got scared to take risks because they didn't want to fall off the list. So, you know, you tell them they're a high potential and then they're not taking risks in their career because they don't want to disappoint anybody by failing at something. So they kind of stall their careers out in middle management. So, you know, potential unto itself really doesn't matter. And it's, you know, I've seen a lot of people who got hired, who the boss said, yeah, they're not going to work out, who later become CEO of the company or some other leadership position, and people who were hired specifically because of their potential who wash out. So we have to remember that that's the paradox is that potential doesn't equal results.
And I'm imagining right now that there's a way to start to make that potential and the results match better. Like, you know, let's say maybe even in ourselves, we realize we're so capable, especially if we're high achievers, right? Like we're capable of so much. And yet there's continually that gap between what we know we can do and what we actually do.
Most of the people who I've interviewed tell me they're not living up to their potential.
Right.
A lot of them would like to be, and they're still not. And so then I ask them sort of what's holding you back? And the answers are all across the board. That's the big thing is that especially in a team, the boss often wants like one answer and they want to build a bridge across that gap from potential to results. And they want to put all the employees on one bus and drive it across. The problem is people are being held back for different reasons. And it's not just a single reason. Some people may have two or three things holding them back. So if you have a team of 10 people, there could be 20 or 30 things that are holding people back. And so there's not a quick answer. The other problem is people who are looking for that quick fix, they want to build that bridge. The problem is that as you as an individual go through life and work your way across the gap, your potential is going to shift farther out because you're going to listen to a great podcast like yours. You're going to read a book. You're going to find a new mentor. You're going to have new experiences. So the potential isn't fixed. Throughout your life, your potential is going to grow and expand. So if you try to build a bridge and put everybody on that bus, they drive across the thing, they're going to fall into the ravine. So what I tell people you have to do when you're working your way across is you have to build like a scaffolding, something that you can build in modules so that you can build your way across. You can go across, you can go up, you can go diagonal. And then as your potential shifts out, you can add some new modules because there's going to be new things holding you back and new answers that you need. And so there's no one size fits all. But what I've found is there's sort of 10 things that people need to do that not everybody has to do all 10, and there's a lot more than 10, but these are the universal ones that come up with, like I said, I've interviewed over 300 people, and these are the things that come up sort of all the time. So I'll just breeze through them real quick, and we can talk about a couple if you want. So number one is, as the individual, you have to take ownership of your life. You can't blame your boss. You can't blame your spouse, or you can't blame anybody else, a coworker, for holding you back. You have to realize that you are where you are because of choices that you made. Everything that happens in life is based on a series of choices that you've made. And if you take 100% ownership for that, it's going to be easier to go farther across the gap. The second thing is you have to have goals. You have to set goals. You have to know what you want. If you don't know what success looks like, there's so many squirrels. There's so many things that can take our attention. Oh, I'm going to go over there. Oh, I'm going to go over there. But when you have a goal, it makes it really easy to answer the tough questions because you just ask yourself, is my answer bringing me closer to the goal or farther from the goal? Number three is if something scares you, you still have to do it. You have to work past the fear because one of the things people say hold them back is fear of a lot of things, fear of failure, fear of success, fear their peers are going to laugh at them, whatever. It doesn't matter. You just have to work past the fear. Number four is connecting with people because all opportunities in our life are going to in some way or another be connected to the people who we meet and who we know. Number five is I think you have to be aggressive with gratitude. If you're not a person who's willing to share the credit and thank the people who take you across that gap, they're not going to take you the next leg. So you have to be really aggressive with giving credit to other people and letting people know that you appreciate them. Number six is you have to deliver on all projects, which means you have to do good work. Lots of times, you know, people are hoping for a magic bullet and they suck at their job. Well, you got to do good work. Number seven is you got to be prepared that change is going to happen because the world changes. The old book, Who Moved My Cheese? Your cheese is going to get moved. It's just going to happen. And you can complain about it or you can figure out how to build more scaffolding and keep working forward. Number eight is you have to be able to ask for help because you can't do it alone. And a lot of people fail because they're not willing to raise their hand and say, I need somebody. Number nine, and something I'm really caught up in right now in my life, is you have to try new things. You have to be willing to do things you've never done before, because if you keep doing the same things, you're going to get the same results. And then number 10, I mean, it seems overdone and over-talked about, but you have to believe in yourself, because there are going to be times where nobody else is going to. So you have to have that self-belief. And in all the people I've interviewed, those 10 things come up time and time and time and time and time again.
That is a great list. I love that list. It's a very comprehensive list. I think I would agree with all of them. But one that I'm really glad that you put on there was this thing about excuses in your number one. And it's actually, I think, the most toxic part or the most toxic thing that gets in people's way is the excuses they make for the results they wish they had.
Yeah, well, I mean, people are always trying to pass the buck and put blame somewhere else. And, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes it's on people, sometimes it's on circumstances, sometimes it's on the company. But the reality is I've done well in my life and I've sucked at things in my life. But the reality is that it's all because of choices I've made. And if I made a bad choice and it led me to a bad spot, you know, I just kind of have to shrug my shoulders and say, yep, and keep moving forward. Because if you get caught up in trying to blame others, you're never going to be able to move past it. So you just have to take ownership. And sometimes it sucks to say, I made a bad decision, or I screwed this up, or I failed. But I think people like it, because it's so rare that people admit to having, you know, faults.
You know, and I don't know if you've noticed this in the interviews you've done, and when you talk to all these different people, do you notice that sometimes people don't even realize they're making excuses, but it's such an ingrained story and it's become their paradigm that it's their friend, right? It's like it's become their way of being. How do you take the approach of helping someone become aware that they're living in an excuse?
Well, I think you're right. I think people don't even know they do it. In fact, I've seen people claim to be taking ownership while blaming somebody else. Like, wow, how did that's a paradox unto itself. Right. But I mean, people do it all the time. And one of the things is, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I'm not getting the support I want at work. Well, who said work's supposed to support you? You know, I you know, where's that written that you're supposed to have I have a horrible boss. Well, who says you're supposed to have a good boss? I've had a lot of bosses. Some of them were good, some of them were bad. But at the end of the day, they're the boss I had at that moment. So I think somebody has to be there to call you out. And I had a friend like that. So when I wanted to become a speaker and an author, and I was trying to do it in that 5-year gap between getting the idea and actually, you know, being pushed out, I was on a ski trip with two buddies. And we were driving down from Tahoe to San Francisco so I could catch a plane back to Texas. And I was lamenting about the fact that I wanted this life as a speaker. And he pulled the car over into a rest stop. And he said, you've been talking about this for years. What do you need? What do you need to do? And this is before self-publishing was really even, I mean, it was possible, but it was expensive and it was hard. Nowadays, you can go on CreateSpace and do stuff right away. But I said, I have to have a book. And he goes, okay, what do you need for a book? And I said, well, you know, I've tried to get a publisher. Nobody will pay any attention to me. I'm just a guy who wants to write about networking. Sorry. And I said, you know, I would need money and I would need an editor, because I'm an okay writer, but I need someone to edit it and make it great. And it would cost money to produce it. And so he asked me how much money, and I won't say how much, but I told him. And he said, okay. So I realized it sounds like a lot of money, but what if I started a publishing company with you and I put up all the money? And I said, well, I'd still need an editor. And he goes, well, my wife is a communication consultant, and that's what she does. She edits corporate communications. She's never done a book, but let me see if she can do it. So one of my best friends and his wife started a publishing company so that I could write a book. They took all my excuses away. You know, I had an editor and I had a publishing company, and it was like, ugh. And so I had to sit down and write the book. So having someone who calls you out on it and then, you know, sweeps those excuses away, you know, is probably the best thing that ever happened to me. So Dave knows it, because I tell him all the time, I'm aggressive with my gratitude, but it's very, very true that I was making excuses for years. And he basically said, okay, what's the biggest excuse? And he broke it down to the smallest thing. Then he removed the excuse and I had to write the book.
And really, isn't that what, I know you also coach and mentor people. Isn't that really what we hope for in the people who hire us, is that we can take their excuses away. We can kind of shine the light on that blind spot and say, if this is what you really want, then let's create the reality where it can exist.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you go to a coach, because not everybody has a best friend who will pull the car over and fund your book.
I want one of those friends too. I'd like to manifest one of those.
You know what? You just missed him because he went to San Diego State too. I always say I was in the lucky dorm club because he's like the second person I ever met at San Diego State. And, you know, you and I never crossed paths, but we were there the same years. And so you just missed out on him as a friend because he was just living across campus.
I really think I might have gone to the wrong college inside the college, because I was in the business college and you were in the what college again? Remind me.
Well, so I was a political science major, but right. I'll tell you, Dave was a business major. I just met him in the dorms.
Well, maybe I did cross paths with him at some point. I just didn't get that friendship. Well, that's so funny. Our lives probably crossed over at some party at some point.
Well, if there was a party, I was there. So
awesome. So, you know, when we really want to make sense of this idea today, I think one of the key points you just brought out in those 10 ideas, and I think it might have been number 8, I wasn't able to write them all down fast enough, is this idea of support. And I can't tell you how many people I've talked to. I mean, I've been coaching for 18 years now, you know, been in the personal development world for close to 25. And one thing I know for sure is the people who feel like they have to do it on their own or they're not willing to ask for help, it takes them the longest, they're the most frustrated, and they seem to crawl towards results. What do you tell people who are really committed to doing it all by themselves?
Well, we live in this world where the Lone Ranger, you know, you and I are old enough to remember who the Lone Ranger was. The younger listeners are probably like, oh, I think I've heard of that. You know, the Lone Ranger, you know, the John Wayne attitude is prevalent. Everybody thinks that all these people made it on their own. But like, you know, Steve Jobs, yeah, he was a great visionary, but he didn't build the iPhone. He just came up with the concept, and then he had people around him who actually had to do the actual engineering. You know, all these people who we think have accomplished so many great things by themselves, they haven't accomplished them by themselves. It's just the persona of what our society wants to see and hear. And so I think all the time I have to remind people that, you know, you have to connect with the right people. And it doesn't mean that you have to hire people. I mean, I'm a solopreneur. I have very few people I pay any money to. I do most of it myself. And it's not because I'm a control freak. It's because I'm cheap. And, you know, I'm not, people are like, oh, you must be so overworked. No, it's like, everybody's always like, oh, you need a virtual assistant to book your airfare. Well, how hard is it to book a flight? That's like the least of my worries. I book a flight, it takes me 4 seconds on my iPhone. So, but I have people who do my accounting, because otherwise I'd probably be arrested because I would suck at it. But you have to connect with people who are going to be supportive. And so having a group around you, whether it's a mastermind group, whether it's a coach who you pay for, whether it's a mentor, if you don't have those people, you're going to run into problems. So one of the things on that list is connect with people, because you can't do it alone. You're going to need somebody to help you through it. And I have two gentlemen who I mentor. They've become like my additional children. They're both in their late 20s. Their nickname for me is Dad. I've actually told them that cool older brother would have been a much better nickname, but apparently not. But one of them went through a big career change. And while he was going through it, there were salary negotiations, there were all kinds of things. And he turned to me time and time again. He didn't turn to his own parents, even though they're smart, because who wants to go to their mom and dad for career advice? So he trusts me. I've been there for him in the past. He turned to me. And in the end, it all worked out the way I said it was going to work out. And it worked out very well for him. And he actually said, how do people go through this who don't have a mentor? And I said, they make a lot of mistakes. I know I did. I didn't have that type of a person that I could turn to when I was 28, you know, or even 38 or 48. So I've had to rely on friends and peers. But, you know, he had somebody he could turn to. And I always warned him that all my advice, I could be wrong. And, you know, I haven't been. But he asked me, he goes, how come you're always right with this stuff? And I said, because I've seen it before. I'm 52. If it hadn't happened to me, it happened to one of my friends. And as much as the 28-year-olds want to think the world is so different, the world's not that different. And that's why I think cross-generational friendships are so important, because while I'm called the mentor and they're called the mentee, the truth is I learned just as much from having them in my life. And I'm, you know, the friendship that we've developed keeps me, you know, excited. I mean, it keeps me young. It keeps me connected to what they're doing. I know more about what 28-year-olds do than I would otherwise, because, you know, my own kids aren't that old, but they wouldn't tell me. So, you know, I think that having the right people around you, whether it's in a work relationship, a friendship, a mentor relationship, a coaching relationship, I just don't know how you do it. otherwise.
Yeah, I agree. I give so much credit, again, that aggressive gratitude, to the people that I've surrounded myself with over the years, because they're the ones that opened doors I couldn't see. They're the ones that gave me a little push when I was afraid or didn't think I was capable. And, you know, I've had a few friends over the years kind of give me the sit down and come on, get your head out of your butt. Let's do something here. And it's changed everything. So, you know, when you don't have the blessing of those friendships or a mastermind, you do need a coach. And I think you need all of it. Just like Tiger Woods or any professional sports, any professional athlete would surround themselves with lots of capable people. We go farther faster when, you know, there's that accelerator.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I know we could talk about so many different things around the paradox of potential, but I think we should wrap up by sharing a little bit about your Cool Things podcast and where people can find you, because it's one of the coolest podcasts out there right now. Wow.
I put cool in the title, which automatically makes it the Cool Podcast. In fact, if you go to Twitter, you just search at Cool Podcast and you will find Cool Things Entrepreneurs Do. I've been doing the show for 3.5 years. I've done well over 360 episodes. Most of those are interviews. I don't know the exact number, but 320 of them probably are interviews with entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, business leaders, even some people who work for companies who have that entrepreneurial spirit inside the company, just talking about ways they find success. Because one of the things that's become very clear to me is that success leaves clues. And so if you ask questions of people who have been successful and you listen to their answers, then eventually some of it's going to stick. And so, you know, the show is created as much for me to keep fresh and to keep having new ideas as it is for the audience. Because, you know, I found that by interviewing all of these people and asking them, you know, what was their journey? What led them to starting their own business? What led them across that gap between potential and results? You know, I get little nuggets and theories and clues and tidbits, if you will, that really, you know, are inspiring. And that's one of the reasons I think that my business continues to grow is I get the chance to interview these people. And that's why I think listening to shows like mine and yours is so important. And we live in an age where all this is free.
I mean, I think that's why we all do podcasts, right? Because we get to learn, but we're also giving a vehicle for others to learn things that they may not be able to tap into. So find it on iTunes. Any other places they should be looking for it if they're not an iTunes person?
iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube at tomsinger.com/podcast. It's all over the place.
Tom, thanks so much for joining in today. We love wrapping up the show by sharing one tip, one thing you wish you would have known earlier that has helped you amplify your success.
I think that I wish that I had started my business earlier and that I didn't have to wait for perfection. So I think the tip was if I had been pushed out 5 years earlier, I'd be 5 years farther along this path. So, you know, I don't know if that's, you know, exactly what you asked, but I think if you want to do something, go do it. You don't even have to do it full time. Just, you know, I think when you have momentum, it's easier to pivot than waiting for everything to be perfect and then starting from a dead stop.
Yeah. So don't put things off when you feel that catalyst inside. You just go for it.
Yeah. Do something. And if it's not the right thing, you can always change course. But like I said, when you have momentum, I mean, if you look at the Silicon Valley, one of the things they teach is fail fast and pivot. Because if you're doing something, doesn't matter if it's successful, you'll be able to pivot to the next thing and try that. And eventually you're going to pivot into something that's going to work. There's a lot of companies out there that have been highly successful that are doing things that they were not started to do. I mean, you know, whoever thought Apple Computer would be in the phone business, but, you know, they were moving, they were shaking, they were doing, and they found something new and they pivoted. And, you know, that's exactly what I think we have to do in our lives.
That's a great note to leave us on today. Thank you so much, Tom. Glad you could join us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll be back again next week with another exciting episode of Amplify Your Success. I am Melanie Benson, and I can't wait to hear how you take today's episode and spark some new possibilities. If you've loved this episode and you think others might too, give it a little social media love. That on the show page, there are buttons that you can share it. I'm on Twitter, Mel Coach. I'm on Facebook, Melanie Benson Strick. I'm on Instagram at Coach Melanie Benson. So thanks so much for being here. We'll be back again next week with another exciting, inspiring episode of Amplify Your Success. I'm Melanie Benson. Bye for now.